Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read, or is it a fantasy book? When I read them, there's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book or a few months later, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today, like normal, is Juliana.
Hello everyone.
And you've read this book too?
I've read this book too.
Hold the book
actually,
up.
Actually,
you have it
once.
Right next to you there as a paper book. Oh, okay.
Why should I hold it up?
Well,
You're the only person to see it.
I want to have a look at it. It's a very nice cover book.
I have a little story about this.
All right, tell us the little story about why you have a paper copy
of this. What happened was, earlier this year, I got given a book, which is an autobiography of a former professor of mine, where just for family and himself and stuff, he wrote his autobiography and published it. In a
self-published book.
Not a little book, but it was quite chunky. And I actually really enjoyed reading this paper book.
Yeah.
So I kind of found myself thinking, there are certain books that you have read multiple times.
Yeah.
And that we keep coming back to.
Right.
And there's one book that you haven't read so many times recently because it was not really
available.
So I thought to myself, I want to do something for you, make you happy. So what happened? I got online and searched for the book.
Yeah.
And bought it. And
which
the book is Finity's End.
By C.J. Sherry.
Yeah,
because I keep wanting to book.
I want to give it to you.
Thank you so much.
On the podcast.
Thank you
this
so much.
Is for you.
For giving me the book. It was really good. But on a previous podcast, like a few weeks ago, you're like, oh, and there's something else, but I don't want to tell you about it now. And then I didn't think about it until like a week later when I then... And then I listened back to the podcast and I sent you a message saying, thank you so much. I think I know what you've bought me. And I thought the thing that you bought me was C.J. Cherry's Finity's End. So I can read it and add it maybe to the SFBRP must reads list.
Yes. So while you sent me that message, I thought, there's no way that you would know that I got you this book because we haven't talked about it. There was nothing
indicating. But I'm clever enough. I can just guess when you drop
and
a hint.
So I didn't think that you were clever like this. So I thought you thought because we recently talked about the culture novels.
Yeah.
I thought you thought that I got you the culture novel books.
Series.
So when you said because thank you very much, I thought, oh, he would like to get that.
All right.
And then I went online again.
And actually
after already
so
ordered.
You were confused about the thing that I wanted to say thank you to because I didn't want to give away. I didn't want to say like I totally read you from like you mentioned one thing and from that I picked up what you were doing and I'm thanking you in advance for it because I like
so
it.
So you know
and
me
you
too
thought
well.
It might have been that you I
thought
had
I
seen,
was cleverer than that.
Yeah, you thought I had seen in your Amazon search history the full culture novel, Ian M. Banks full culture novel, 10 books series. And then you were like, well, Luke is thanking for me for that, so I'll buy that. So we ended up with
10 culture novel paper books that I got, which were published again a few years ago in a series that you know fits with the covers of the book and it's all nice. It's 10 books of the culture series. There are a few missing.
Well, thanks for that story.
And
so what it comes down to I read this book, Ian M. Banks Inversions, last year as a let me check through to make sure this book should be on the SFBRP must reads list.
Yes.
And I listened to it as an audiobook, which I'm not sure if I had done before. No, I must have done.
All
because,
right.
Well, did I buy it new? I don't remember if I bought it new on Audible. I guess I could check.
Yeah.
But I'm pressing Command T for a new tab, but I'm not in Safari.
The browser,
I'm not in the browser, so it's bringing up some random stuff. And now it's brought up Day of the Triffids as a note for some reason. I need to go back here. So what do I need to do? Library. When did I get this book in the library? Because if it's recent, you know, if it's in this recent thing. So I must have already listened to it as an audiobook. Previously I've read it as an ebook and previously I've read this book as a paper book.
Yeah.
So this must be probably my fourth time reading Inversions by Ian M. Banks.
Okay. Well, I just checked on my Goodreads of this book, Inversions.
It's your second time.
It's my second time.
Yeah.
The first time I read it in March 2014.
Yeah, so 12 years ago.
Almost exactly 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think as an ebook, and I think as a German ebook.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because in the earlier times when I read books, like with the Alistair Reynolds books, the first ones.
A lot of those are translations.
I read in German. Anyway, I...
And the P.T.F. Hamilton books as well. Like, yes, these British science fiction
authors. Some
of those, yeah.
Anyway, but this time I read the freshly arrived paper book.
Yep, you were the... You bought this series for me, and then you immediately were the first one.
I was the first one to read it.
All right, then. Let's get into this. Into the book itself.
Yeah.
Should we do it?
Let's do it.
Well, actually, one more meta thing about the reading experience is that we come up with this project, episode 550. We talked about the SFPIP must-read list, our own like masterworks list of 50, I think it's up to like 55 books now. You know, but the idea was like one book for each week of the year. Let's bring it up here. Yes, this list here as well. So lots of lists on here as well. And three culture novels made it on here because I think the books are so different that it's unlike some, you know, like, oh, this one's space opera and this is another thing and this is another thing. But so there's Player of Games, which is under the category board game diplomacy.
Yeah.
Another one, which is Use of Weapons, which is under military science fiction. And then this one, Inversions, which is under science fiction point of view versus fantasy point of view. Yep. And the other ones that go along with there is some other books where... Are we like from, you know, depending on you're reading it and you're like, and sometimes it's very explicit that there's alternating viewpoints in the books.
Like Elder Race.
Elder Race by Adrian Tchaikovsky. And was it Planet of Exile by Ursula K. Le Guin? Yes, that's another one there as well.
Yeah.
So it's these books, those other books are very explicitly, if you read this, like the alternating chapters, one of them is from the point of view of someone who's on an alien planet and they are in a science fiction world. Mm-hmm. And the other one is someone who's native to that alien planet and they are very much in a fantasy world. And the science fictional stuff that's happening around them, they think of as fantasy magic. And the science fiction person is looking at this same phenomenon and not seeing, you know, magic locusts or whatever. They are seeing helicopter drone ships or whatever it's going to be.
It's all about the perception.
All about the perception. This one gets mixed in with this because this also has alternating chapters.
Mm-hmm.
But the fantasy point of view, or both of the viewpoint characters in both, or both of like the narrators, or both of the way these books are written, at least one of them is explicitly from the fantasy point of view.
Yeah.
But there is a science fiction person.
Like a local native.
Yeah, local native there. Mm-hmm. And the other one, it's not totally clear who wrote that.
Yeah.
And it's like a little bit more from the other side, but also isn't giving the game away and is still very much, look, we're in a fantasy world here. And it is very much like, you know, kind of like late Middle Ages, late medieval. There's been on this planet, there has been a comet has struck or some meteor has struck and wiped out the main city where the emperor was or whatever.
Yeah.
And
so it's political reshuffling.
And it's political reshuffling, but it's never really clear in the text of the book, was that an act from outside?
Mm-hmm.
Was this empire so bad that special circumstances like, well, we've got to take this guy out, and it doesn't matter if it's going to fuck up agriculture for the next 100 years.
Yeah.
This is really bad. We need to shuffle things around.
Yeah.
So was it a meteor strike, or was it an asteroid, or was it a ship came and crashed there? Like, what's going on there?
Yeah.
Never explicit. But what is very clear, if you've read any other of these books of the culture series, is that there's two characters who are both outsiders, obviously from the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of them is from special circumstances and the other one isn't from special circumstances, but it's never always entirely clear which one is from which one is doing the bidding of the culture, which one is from the special circumstances contact unit or whatever it is.
Yes.
Which is like the CIA style, shady thing, messing around in local politics.
Exactly. It's all about the influence and manipulation.
Yes. And this is very explicit in the book that the characters in the book are saying, we need to be proactive in doing the thing and changing the local politics or doing the thing to change it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is saying, I don't think we should change it, but we should be there to help out, but mm-hmm. more in a more reactive kind of way. And sometimes this is stated explicitly, mm-hmm. but it's the culture. So you don't know if when the character is telling the story of this fantasy land, because he's telling the stories to these children, like to yes. the child in the book.
Yeah.
And he's telling the story of like, oh, well, back here, you know, back in the day, there were these two friends and they were getting on. But it's the culture. And because the two friends have different names, it's never clear that the male in the culture back in this other world is the same characters yeah. who are there. And it's this book, and again, just to come straight out and say it, this book is a 5-star book for me
yeah.
because it is working at a level
yeah.
that I just don't read anybody else write at. Like yeah. nobody else can do thematic exploration, political exploration, personal story exploration, internal exploration. All of this stuff is done at such a level that everything is unreliable. In a previous episode, I was talking about Alistair Reynolds writes really good books, but he can't do unreliable narrator. Like
yeah.
everything in the book has to be true.
Yeah.
But it just the character themselves, it's always the character doesn't know the truth. And that's why they might confuse. Not because they are telling lies.
Yeah.
But this book is layers and layers and layers
yeah.
of unreliable narrators telling unreliable stories about unreliable people lying yeah. to each other.
Yeah.
And the political machinations that are going on, I don't know. Like, I can't say clearly which one of the two culture people in this fantasy world who are having an impact.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure which one of those is which of the two characters that one of them tells the backstory of mm-hmm. about this person thinks we should intervene and this person doesn't think we should intervene.
Yeah.
And which one, and I think this person is correct. And the kid's like, well, I think this one's correct.
Yeah.
I'm not sure the character who is telling that story, which yeah. side of that argument he yeah. is.
Because this storytelling is also all about you learn about something and then you might change your mind.
Yes, you read the other yes. point of view from, but these two people aren't looking at the same events. Of course, they do interact in some cases, especially later on in the book. You're like, oh, yeah. that person, okay, yeah. this is set up in this way. But like to be the point where one of the main, let's actually just, I'm going to bring up the Wikipedia page here. So there's Vosil, who is the doctor. She
yes.
is there.
Yes.
I'll put it this way. In the culture world, where you can decide to change your gender
yes.
at any time you want.
Yeah.
At the moment, Vosil is a woman.
Is a woman.
A lady doctor.
Yeah.
In this fantasy world. And she is looking after is
protector.
It actually a king? A protector.
He's called a protector, which is kind of like...
No. She is the doctor
to the king. Oh, yeah, that's
king
true.
King Quience.
Yes.
Quience. And then on the other side is Protector Urelin, who is now the new kind of emperor, but not emperor because it's very specifically not royal, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Because he was he doesn't come from royalty. He's not
yeah.
one of the dukes or the barons or any, you know, what do you call it? Hereditary. He doesn't have a hereditary title.
Yeah.
And then there is Dewar. How do you pronounce that? Dewar?
Yeah.
Dewar? In the book, it was Dewar.
I always thought in my head it was... Dewar. Yeah.
Is the bodyguard and he's the other person from it.
Yeah.
And he's the one telling the story about these two different sides. One of them is proactive and one of them isn't proactive.
Yeah.
But he isn't the proactive one, but it
yeah.
feels like he's the one who should be being proactive, but isn't.
Yes.
So it's like he's saying like there's these two sides to the arguments of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Should we be proactively doing things in other people's civilizations or
yeah.
nations or lands?
Yeah.
But he isn't being proactive.
Yeah.
But it feels like he's saying, no, I'm being the proactive one.
Yeah.
But he isn't. He's actually being reactive.
Yes.
And then on the other side, you're like, the doctor is coming in and trying to change things.
Yeah.
But she isn't being... Anyway, I
yeah.
love the idea that all the way through the book, even like on this like fourth time read through,
mm-hmm.
I'm going, so which one is the proactive?
Yeah.
And I was forgetting, oh, which one is the proactive one and which one isn't the proactive one? And you get to the end of your book and I'm like, I'm still not sure which
yes.
is the proactive one and which is the not proactive
yeah.
one.
And I think this is such a... such a good thing about this book is how much it is about storytelling and also the dichotomy of experiences and how much it influences your own actions.
Yeah.
Because it is about the being proactive and non-proactive by having experienced, like having had bad experiences in the past by doing either or the other.
Yeah.
And then how does that reflect on your future actions?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And does it have an effect?
And so that's the thing. It's sort of like this person who sent their friend out on the end of a plank over a waterfall or whatever it's going to be. And like, do I step off the end of the plank and make them fall or do I not? Sort of like, oh, you should trust me. But is that the right lesson that you should trust people or is the right lesson that you shouldn't trust people?
Yes.
At the end of the book, I'm like, which one of these was the person who fell into the waterfall and trusted and was changed so much from the other one and that their history between the two of them isn't there anymore and one of them's affecting the other? And I'm like, was the lesson learned that you should be trustful or was the lesson learned that you shouldn't trustful? Which one of them learned one lesson and now are they, and now have they gone back on their not trusting anyone and to be now more trustful, or have they learned to be more trustful from the point of view? Anyway,
it's very...
maybe there is something in the text which explains very clearly which one of which, which one of these ones is the one which is the correct way of looking at it.
I have always read it in the sense that both of them have adjusted their actions.
Like towards the middle.
Towards,
or towards the other.
Yes, towards the other.
Yeah, and that's the point, is that whichever one is on the either end of the backstory of it, now have they swapped places or have they stayed in the same places? Have they gone to the middle and backed off again?
Yes.
It's not clear.
No.
And this is me, only 15 minutes into this episode, already saying that this is one of my favourite things in science fiction. And all of the latest stuff, which is, you know, talking about, oh, gender this and this person representation here. Just the fact that you can, that the, in the text of the book, the characters, like, don't have sex changes. They don't change gender halfway through.
No.
But knowing that the culture exists and that main plot points of other culture novels are characters swapping genders halfway through the book or in the past having swapped genders and then deciding, oh, I'm going to be female or I'm going to be male or I'm going to whatever like that. Knowing that's possible, going into a fantasy book, reading about two different people told from the point of view, again, I'm just saying there's this extra layers going on there, that just because two characters in the past are being said male and female, it doesn't mean that right now they're the same.
Yes.
And just that little drip of ambiguity makes everything so more unreliable, which means you can, there's just so much more to think about in this book.
And this is, I think, the genius about this book. This book itself,
one of the genius parts.
Yes.
Of,
this book itself, if you don't know anything about the culture, is on its surface level, on the surface detail.
The surface detail of this book. Yeah.
The surface of this book is very much a medieval background fantasy.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all about how, first of all, people in that society think and act, and it's all very medieval or very conservative from our perspective. And it feels real. It feels like you are in that society.
Well, let's get deep down into this. The previous review that we did, literally, we finished recording half an hour before this one. I was talking about this book, which was set in medieval times or set in, you know, 11th century or 12th century, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, just this garbage book here.
Yeah.
But it is... it is bringing into a, like, let's just say, for the sake of it, a medieval fantasy or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, there at the same time, there's knights and crusades going on, even though this is in the Muslim side of the Arabian Peninsula.
Yeah.
Rather than on the, you know, like on the, where Christians are coming over.
Yes.
So it isn't quite in the same way. But the writing is so bad that it's bringing in modern terms and modern, but most importantly, modern politics and modern sensibilities, but isn't confronting what it would actually be like if somebody was in a medieval time, but also thinks that women should be equal to men or whatever like that, you know.
I read some more reviews of the previous book.
I really don't want to get into that too deeply, but
But the main thing that jumps out at me, I didn't read this book in any way, but what jumps out at me is that lots of people said, oh yeah, this language that's being used is like quippy Twitter-esque yeah. kind of language where yeah. you have little bits of backwards and forwards in Twitter style.
Yeah, yeah.
Which nobody yeah, yeah. Okay, in the medieval
let's put all
would
that aside.
Do that.
That's not the point I'm making. I was yeah, halfway yeah. through the point. My point okay. is that if you bring in modern day attitudes into yeah. a medieval time,
yeah.
that's really, I mean, it's kind of impossible to do if everyone's from that time and grew up there and stuff like that.
Yes.
What Inversions does, what Ian M. Banks does in Inversions is he can bring in more modern or even more modern or like future, whatever it is, you know, like yeah. say this is culture stuff. So this is even more weird science fiction future. Everyone mm-hmm. is equal. There mm-hmm. is no hierarchy, although I mean there is because you know the culture and yeah. First contact. What I'm saying is sort of like the in the personal politics thing where everybody can live like in the book. Everybody is a prince. Everybody is a princess. Everybody lives like a king. You know, there is nobody who isn't the same, has the same level of privilege. Like yeah. that, like so much more advanced politically, so much more advanced or whatever you want to do culturally, mm-hmm. personal politics, gender politics, you know, equality, everything like that in the culture is at this utopian level.
Yes.
And then those people can exist in a medieval world.
Yeah.
And then you can see what how they reflect on the medieval world that they're in.
Yeah.
Again, through the eyes of people who are actually there looking at them, reflecting on that.
Right.
What I'm trying to say is the shit way of doing it is just by having historical fiction people just having modern views on it, sort mm-hmm. of like, well, of course slavery is bad because of course slavery is bad, mm-hmm. like even though this is, you know, 500 years before the, you know, abolitionist movement came along to try and stop slavery, mm-hmm. our main characters in the book are just randomly against slavery in a way which makes no sense.
Yeah.
But if you had someone from the modern world, Connecticut, you know, Yankee and King Arthur's court go back, yeah, yeah. then you can reflect sort of like, wow, everyone here is a barbarian.
Yeah.
But then if you have like a science fiction future person going back to a medieval stuff, and then the people at the time looking at them and reflecting on it, it's just working at a better level
yeah.
of reflecting on the misogyny and yeah. Patriarchy
yeah.
and regressive politics and conservative politics and authoritarianism and
yes.
Empire and all of this kind of stuff. There is someone there at the heart of it who has better politics than even we do in the 21st century
yeah.
can reflect on that. Again, it's kind of a minor point, but like it's just way cleverer
yes.
than other people do. And again, Adrian Tchaikovsky does that really well in Elder Ace and his other fantasy stuff. He is very knowingly playing with, hey, a lot of the people here have got like really progressive politics. What do you think about that in this fantasy world?
Yeah.
But he's kind of flagging it up as yeah. being like, and now we're going to have a union meeting and now yeah. we're going to get these lefties in here and now we're going to have yeah. academics talking about philosophy. And you're like, oh, this is a fantasy world where that kind of thing can happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I have three points I want to make. One point is that in the book Inversions itself, there's no culture world building happening.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely none of that. And the second point is that I now started thinking that you might be thinking that the people in Inversions are people who want to live in the medieval world.
No.
Okay. Because I
Dewar is there.
Yes.
And what's the name?
Vorsil
is there, and yeah. Dewar is there.
Yes.
And obviously, one of them went there
yes.
to go and, you know, because they're yeah. working for special circumstances or contact or whatever it is. They're there to do that. And yeah. I reckon the other one turned up there because they knew that their friend was going there. Like
yeah.
they let slip what the secret mission was.
Yes.
And he's just going down there and being like, well, I'm just going to be here to balance them out. Or I'm just going to be. That's what I imagine
okay. yeah.
these characters are doing.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, good. Because I was thinking, like, it didn't feel like the people on the planet.
No, not the people on the planet.
No.
I'm saying the two
yes.
people,
okay.
either the bodyguard or the doctor, again, yeah. alternating chapters called
yeah,
The
yeah.
Bodyguard, The Doctor.
Yes.
Both of them are there from the culture.
Yes.
We're not quite, I would say one of them has been sent there officially from special circumstances.
Yeah.
And the other one is just there because they're a culture person and they're like, well, I can just go and do a thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, special circumstances is just letting it happen, or they're like, well, that's now part of the natural experiment that's happening there. We have two culture agents accounts.
Yeah.
One of them official, one of them not unofficial. But again, none of this is stated.
No.
Because it doesn't make sense that both of them are culture agents
no.
who are there officially.
I don't think they are.
Because it feels like at some point they're working at cross purposes.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yes, it's never...
And I would say the doctor is the official one because
yes.
she has got a knife missile.
I know. So I think that too.
Yes.
And I think there were... And actually, I was always thinking more like a slightly Dutch-sounding
yeah, yeah.
Dewar.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think he just went there and he is kind of like, I want to just engulf myself in this culture and just
yeah.
Live like...
Yeah, but he's there because his friend is there.
Yes.
His previous friend is there.
Yes. And,
so.
And I think that is the... that. Feels to me like to be the story of
yeah.
of him always being the active one, and then by having the experiences and also because he learned about empathy
yeah
by his own behavior through the eyes of his friend
yeah
I think because of that he learned that being always proactive isn't teaching you anything, isn't helping anything.
So you think it's that way around?
He was the guy
who was being too proactive.
Who was standing on the plank saying like, oh yeah, you can trust me, you can trust me. And then...
Oh, you think it's that way around?
Yeah, I think it's that way around.
Okay, it could be that way around. But again, that I can't say 100%
around. Absolutely not. So that is one level of this whole book. But also the third thing I want to say is that in this book... people, of course, there's lots of talking and thinking and explaining and narrating and telling stories and stuff, but also a lot of things are happening. And so that means that people are not only talking and saying stuff,
yeah,
they are saying stuff through their actions.
Yes.
And I think this is one of the biggest difference between Tall Wave Squeakhawk books.
Where everything is stated out by the characters and then their actions follow along from what they say they're going to do.
And they are oftentimes actually acting completely different. In some of the reviews of the previous book, it's just in my brain. They said, yeah, they are saying, oh, this she's like a retired pirate queen and
yeah.
really clever and whatever. And then some people saying, but then what she does is utterly childish and
yeah.
and dumb.
Yeah.
So
because it's written by someone who only knows childish and dumb stories.
So what happens is there is a massive gap between how a person is portrayed and explained
yeah.
as and then what they actually are doing.
So
and in this book,
yeah.
people
Ian and Banks is cleverer than everybody else.
They do as they say
yeah.
and they act as they are described.
Right.
And so, of course, then we have the...
Backs it up.
Yeah, it backs it up. And also that backs up the unreliable narrators
yeah.
super well.
It gives away, you know, when you actually discover what the main plot is, the twist
yeah.
is. And you're like, well, why does this person from... And again, mild spoilers here, that one, the female doctor, falls in love with the king or
yeah.
whoever it is.
Yeah.
And she's sort of like, oh, and then I told him I loved him. Oh, that was a big mistake. And I was like,
yes.
well, what does she see in them? And then as you go yeah. through the book, you're like, oh no, this guy's like really, like, this guy's really clever. Like, this is one of those things where it just goes to show like, no, people in medieval times were just as clever as we were, but they just had different problems.
Yes.
So we can't rate them on the same level of intelligence or whatever, because like the brains haven't evolved more. It's just what they were spending their brain energy on was something like other things
yes.
and different things. You
yes.
know what I mean?
Yes.
You're like, oh right, yes. Charismatic leader who's very powerful and all this kind of stuff. You're like, yeah, I would fall in love with this guy. And then by the end of it, you're like, oh, he was actually cleverer than everybody.
Yeah.
You're like, oh right. Oh, we thought the culture people were clever. But actually the people there were the real clever, you know, this other guy was actually a real clever guy.
Yeah.
And that the other characters slowly gain it. But then you're like, but this unreliable narrator, was it actually, you know, and you're like, what's going on there? But yes, so I do understand that, like the what they're saying they're going to do, it's just one-to-one matching, because again, sometimes people
yes.
are tricking each other.
Yeah, yeah.
But then that makes sense. You know,
exactly.
The political maneuvering also
yes.
makes sense. The
yes.
action, the, you know, assassination attempts, the torture, all these different kind of things.
Yeah.
It all works. You're like, every single character here is worked out.
Yes.
That they can just do things and we understand that they're doing them because they are a complete person in their own right, in their own story.
Yeah. And that is such a gift by an author to have like even side characters with fully developed character traits.
Okay.
Is so good.
So let's bring this back. What Ian M. Banks is doing here in this book, mm-hmm. better than anyone, is an exploration of a science fiction worldview.
Yeah.
But also as the exploration of a fantasy worldview.
Yeah.
Informing each other, but tricking us into think we're only seeing the fantasy worldview when actually we're seeing both. Of course, the characters tell these long stories about life in the culture, but from like, here's a fairy story or a fantasy story, you know, like all that kind of stuff. So that works really well. Also, what he's doing better than anybody else is like the characterization. Mm-hmm. Now, there's these recent books where I'm like, oh, these books, which are, using science fiction or like these fantasy tropes or these ideas, but making the books a lot more literary, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. Mm. So like recent examples were what's he called? Sea of Tranquility.
Yeah.
Which is, and these other books by Emily St. Mandel St. John or whatever her name is. And she's writing these literary books and people are going, here's the best science fiction book. Goodreads is like, here's the best science fiction. Everyone's favorite science fiction of the year. And you're reading it like, well, this is terrible science fiction, but like, I understand what they're going for by writing like this kind of literary fiction, which is like very internal and like, you know, human scale problems rather than like the world is going to end. But then she does do that. But then the big problems in the pandemic book, the Station 11, is like, here it's really a character study of an actor who was in a play and he was the last person to die, not of the plague, before the play. And you're like, oh, this is actually kind of like a small, like, what's it like to be a B-list actor from Toronto kind of story. That is actually what the story is about.
Yeah.
And all of the science fiction stuff that goes along, plague novel and all, like the timey-wimey and living on the moon stuff, is just like a supporting of like a different style of thing. You know, Ministry of Time is the same thing. You're like, oh, it feels like time travel, but actually what it is like this, what's it like to live through climate change, a year in London as the world is heating. Oh, and it's a romance as well, you know. And when there are wolves again as well, you're like, oh right, there's some science fictiony stuff going on here, but actually what we're doing is like going through like this close like what you would otherwise think of as literary fiction, which is sort of like some science fiction tropes are being mentioned here or some fantasy tropes are being, but what Ian M. Banks is doing, if this was like all of this other stuff was stripped out, it is such a great, like, just a literary novel, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Like, strip out all of the genre stuff. Strip out that it's fantasy. Strip out that it's actually science fiction hiding as a fantasy.
Yeah.
And all of that. If this was just purely these characters in these situations and how they interact with each other and the expressions of their emotions and the expressions of their their internal characters work. And I'd say there's like six main characters in this book where we have all of those stuff. He's doing better than all of these other people who are like pretending to write science fiction, which are actually literary novels or actually romance novels or all these other kind of things. But he's just better at those. Of course, he doesn't have an entire Ian M. Banks thing of being like a super successful literary author, which there aren't any, you know, fantasy or science fiction or genre tropes in his other novels. And if you read those, you're like, well, this is really good. He's really good at that as well.
Yes.
I haven't read all of his other novels. I should get to some more of them.
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely noticeable that this is an author that isn't just tied to one genre and
with the literary side of a more literary science fiction, or in this case, fantasy science fiction novel.
Yes.
And there are some authors who can do that really well, but to be able to do the science fiction at such a high level, and in this book, the fantasy at such a high level, and the literary stuff at such a high level, it's like, it's kind of like when I'm reading these other books which are trying to do this kind of thing, I was like, oh, maybe this is the book which is doing it for me. And even when I read a book which I like of this style, which is sort of like, oh, this is getting there, you know, of bringing in, like, writing a literary novel or a fantasy or a whatever, you know, a romance novel or whatever it is, but using some science fictiony kind of tropes to go along with it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, When There Are Wolves Again is approaching good enough quality writing, but then the plotting doesn't always make sense, and yes. the character motivations don't make sense, and yes. like the alternating characters and how they reflect of each mm-hmm. other isn't at the same level of this, yeah. even though I think it's very good. Yeah. It's getting there. And you're like, oh man, if Ian and Banks had written When There Are Wolves Again, it would definitely be but again, that's kind of like,
yeah.
That's kind of like not fair to hold up like an all-time great author to go, yeah. well, if this author was writing this book, it would be much better. And I'm like, yeah.
You can't really do that.
Yeah, it's kind of not fair to judge other books by how, but that is in the end, that's why these other books don't get 5 stars, they only get 3 stars or only get 4 stars. It's because yeah. I'm like, ah, yeah, this is good. But if Ian and Banks had been writing this same thing, I know how good it could be because I've read Inversions.
Yes. And Inversions is like generally the Coulter novels. It's not really like the normal kind of series that you read. And this book you could read without any knowledge of the culture.
No, I'm not sure.
I think you could
read it. I don't think it would be a 5-star book for you.
It wouldn't everything make sense completely. You would yeah. be more on the level of the characters in the book because you wouldn't understand.
Right. And this is what
things.
I'm saying. This is the kind of thing, like this book has got 3.96 on Goodreads yeah. here. Actually, maybe if I click the culture, let's have a look at some of these other culture novels and see their ratings. Yeah, Consider Flip is not, yeah, but like the mainstream ones, all of them above, yeah, they're all like 4.2. I'm not counting State of the Art because that's not a full one as well. 4.2, yeah. 4.1, 4.24. Yeah, like 4.5 if it's like the, you know, this collection of books as well. So all of his mainstream culture novels, mm-hmm. which are told from the point of view of culture people inside the culture, which isn't yes. State of the Art, it's not Considered Phlebas, and it's not Inversions, all yeah. of them are like 4.2 to 4.5.
yes.
Like, so what he's doing there is obviously the more accessible, like, right, you want space adventures, you want yes. culture, you want special circumstances, you want contact,
yes.
you want these guys doing this fun stuff.
Yes.
And then I think the books which are a little bit more difficult,
yeah,
like this one. And then again, like State of the Art isn't, it's like a novella and it's yeah. set on Earth and it's not very good. I mean, I don't think it's as good because it's, but you know what I'm saying is like, this book is more challenging,
yes.
I think. But that's why it, for the people I think who latch onto it and really like it, this is what makes it a 5-star book.
Then you understand. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a certain set of people who will read this book and they will understand more in depth what's happening.
Yeah.
And there will be people who read this book and say, yeah, this is fine. This yeah. is a 3-star book. Yeah, yeah, no problem.
Or maybe even a 4-star book if yeah. they like the fantasy stuff, but yeah. they don't understand that there isn't magic going on here. It's yeah. not a magic spell. It's
yeah,
literally...
Yeah, I was just about to say, I don't even think it is fantasy. I think it is just
it's
a medieval...
It's as much fantasy as a Game of Thrones kind of stuff.
Yeah, it is just a medieval cult society yeah. but that's on a different planet.
But also, for that, it's also very good. The intrigue yes. is really good.
Yes.
And I really like it that the payoff at the end, some of the twists and turns at the end, paid off at the level of political intrigue mm. and wars and hunting and, you know, all of the stuff that happens in these like more medieval, like medieval histories, you know,
yes.
sort of like these people scheming against them, you know, yeah. and this house against
and
this
revenge
house
and
the
stuff
revenge
like that.
Killing and this is a yeah. you know, this is a stabbing and this is a torture and this is a
yes.
poisoning and this is a, you know, a dragon, although not a dragon in this way, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. like there's different things you can do. So all of this kind of stuff is the reason why this book is definitely an SFPRP must reads list, because it's
yes.
I think it's the best example of the science fiction point of view versus the fantasy point of view
yeah.
idea
yeah.
or like mini subgenre
yeah,
because it both points of view are from the fantasy and then the science fiction is happening in the background.
Yes.
But not in the background. It's very much in the foreground,
yeah.
but we're getting through the eyes of like two other unreliable narrators
yes.
who are both working, like who both have their own reasons for telling
the,
this
the
story.
The amount of levels that this book is playing on.
And then the epilogue, when you read yeah. the epilogue and you're like, oh, this is... Now the epilogue is telling you that, yes, Ian and Banks is like, this is Ian and Banks writing the epilogue, and Peter Kenny, who does the audiobook, he changes between the voice of Welf, isn't
yes.
it Welf, the doctor's apprentice,
yes,
when he's young Peter Kenny uses one voice, and
yeah.
then when he's looking back and he's mm-hmm. doing some narration, it's from mm-hmm. the older point of view, and mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's really very well done, Peter Kenny, you
yes.
made the right decisions
yeah.
in this case.
Yeah,
so yeah, all of that kind of stuff. You get to the epilogue And it's pretty much Ian and Banks going, you thought I was being clever? Yeah, I was being that clever. You thought you were being clever reading that in? Yes, well done. You were as clever. You did read what you thought you should read. Of course, this is the fourth time I've read it, so of course I'm picking up on a lot more. Yeah. But he's pretty much going, yeah, you're right. We're all really clever. Mm-hmm. Well done, everyone. Mm-hmm. This was a special circumstance that we that was happening here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and this stuff and that stuff. And the final story and, like, the ring that they have, sort of like, ah, that ring. As an orbital, you know, it's not just a ring. The symbol of the trading company at the end was sort of like, oh yes, it was a ring. It's sort of like that must have meant something in their home culture. It's sort of like, yeah, rings are very mm-hmm. important. These orbitals are really important. So anyway, what I want to say is,
yeah,
5-star book from me.
Yes.
Clearly, Ian and Banks working at the height of both of his political commentary, his. Well, I say political commentary, but, you know, like what he's doing here is really high level, talking about what it means for a book to be political, which isn't who is in charge. And this is the thing that always annoys me so much about these books. Certainly fantasy books are guilty of this a lot, which is the politics and the power struggles are which one of these, to the common folks, indistinguishable noble people are going to be in charge and have a crown on their head by the end of this book.
Yeah.
Or which of these people can disregard the wishes of normal people as much and it doesn't matter to them, whatever, mm-hmm. but they have power at the mm-hmm. end. And this is one of the key signals of, you know, so a lot of this, like, American politics is sort of like whoever ends up in charge at the end is the winner. And of course they are, because they were the protagonist. So when they do the bad things, they are just as that they are justified to be doing the bad things because they happen to be at the end, even though, like, why would anyone follow them? You know, all this stuff which really annoys me about the political stuff that comes out of so much of Torwave Squeakor and just, like, modern science fiction and modern genre fiction, which is written from that point of view. So sort of, like, it's 100% unreflective, unanalyzed, unwhatever.
Yes. There's no observation
and
happening.
No observation.
Yeah.
And Ian Banks in this book is pretty much saying, look, in a normal fantasy book, it'll be working on this level, mm-hmm. but there's this other stuff going on. In a normal science fiction thing, there'll be a war here, an intervention or not intervention, or we'll do this or not do this. And this entire book is about what it means for someone to have power mm-hmm. and what it means for somebody to want power and mm-hmm. what are the ends, you know, what are the means and what are the ends and all of that kind of stuff, which is normally, like, not foregrounded, but you can tell by what the people are writing that it isn't considered, like, just, oh, we're going to do politics. Who's going to be in charge at the end? This king's going to be in charge. And I'll be like, what does that mean? Oh, and then them being in charge and them learning is personal growth. And it's sort of like, who gets to be murdered at the end, or mm-hmm. which minority is going to have a genocide against them, like mm-hmm. if this was in a real world and these would be our actual political fallouts, which one of these, all of these people are going to die, how many thousands of people are going to die in this battle, all of these, like, real world consequences which would come out of political maneuverings in these books just comes down to, but this person was a good king because they had a good heart and they acknowledged that slavery was bad, or whatever the message of the book, and they realized that empire and colonialism was bad, but there isn't anything at the core of it. There's no wrangling with anything.
Yeah.
And this book is a book.
It's all about wrangling.
It's about people wrangling about
with themselves, with others.
Yeah, with others. Political intervention, not intervention. Acting, not intervention. Being passive, not being passive. Taking a leadership role, not taking a leadership role. Yeah. Taking over, taking command. Using power, not using power.
And also, changing your mind about stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing as well. What is personal growth? And there's loads of personal growth in this book.
Oh, yes.
But the whole point of thousands of people dying isn't about the personal growth of the main character, the mm-hmm. point of view character in the book. And I'm like, oh, isn't it so nice that thousands of people dying or a billion people dying is just background noise for the personal growth of the main character. And this is one of the things when I was listening back to my review of Project Hail Mary, mm-hmm. where I was sort of like, oh yeah, the billion people who are dying on Earth is just background noise to some cool bromance and this one guy being like, and then I spent 2 weeks learning this. I was like, wait, aren't billions of people dying? Oh, these other characters who just die before the story, you know, like only the white male gets through, and then the, you know, the other, like the black person and the woman die on the way there, but the white male gets there and has his own adventure, and it's all about his personal growth, and he learns stuff, and he solves problems. I was sort of like, how many millions of people are dying while you're having a buddy thing with Rocky and the whatever, you know? And this book never allows the deaths of anyone just to become background noise to personal growth of the white male American character.
Yeah.
Again, it's such a low bar to clear.
Yeah.
But this isn't just the bar that Ian and Banks is clearing with this book, that it isn't, nothing is just background for these main characters. It's that the point of the book is wrestling with what background suffering in the world, or what suffering in the world is just background to my own personal development as a human being and as a character.
Yeah.
That's what this book is about.
Yes.
And that is so rarely acknowledged or even addressed in books, but that's what this book is about.
Yeah. And also the impact that this kind of thing has, like having a leader making the decision, oh, that these actions have to be done.
Yeah.
Deciding on doing those actions and then changing the mind, and then also knowing all of that, what it does to their mind, what it does to their, like, it destroys people. Yeah.
And this is, again, and not every scene, but so many scenes in this. There's one of my all-time favorite scenes in any book that I've ever read is the scene where there's like this miniature world, this miniature village that have.
With the child.
And the child is trying to shoot like these catapult trebuchet blocks and stuff like that. And I'm like, what the, go, why is this? But every single scene in this novel is like a fantastic exploration of what it means to be a productive king, or like a good king,
it's so
and a good
much about
leader
the,
in
the teaching and the learning and the outcome and what it means and how they interact, what they do. And it's
great. It's great.
It's really
five-star book. Five-star book. Again, there's so many more things I could talk about, but I just want to say five-star book. And I totally understand if other people read it and don't get all of this out of it. But for me, that's why I can read this book for the fourth time and still think it's a five-star book. Because I'm just sort of like, oh, every scene and every word is there.
Yeah.
Is doing a job. And everything's doing a job.
Absolutely. And to me, this is one of those books where while you're reading it, while you're in the story and you're just letting all of this like just wash over you, it might seem in some way, in some places, a little bit like, this is the issues that I often have with the intrigue and politicking and stuff. But especially when you are in certain scenes, you understand so much of what's going on. In this book, you have to reflect on things.
Right.
It is forcing you to reflect on the things. And it's a little bit like it acts...
I wouldn't say forcing, I'd say allowing.
But, allowing you. But also it's a little bit like an archaeologist who takes off layers.
Yeah, sure.
Carefully takes off layers and layers and layers.
There's,
you don't go in with a big shovel and just go down
like
and get it.
In this book, is like there's just if you read it on its face, there's already four layers of unreliable narration going on.
Yes.
There's the book that Welf found. There's the book that Welf is writing.
Yes.
There's the reason why he's writing the book. There's the reason why he did. Is he the actual author of the other book that he found? What did the other author? Why was it being written from the point of view? Like why is the main character that person? Mm-hmm. You know, and then there's his unreliable story. There's the doctor telling unreliable stories. There's the other guy telling, and then there's the king and the protector also being unreliable. You know, everything is unreliable all the way down.
Yes.
But it tells such a pure, coherent story.
Yes.
That I love it. It's just so good.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely.
Just so good.
I totally agree.
Now, to finish off with this podcast.
Yes.
Just, I mean, I could look at other people's reads. I don't need to. It's good enough. Like, I'm going to skip all of that. This is a must-read book.
Yeah.
This is definitely an SFBRP
must-read. We agree on that one.
No, also, this time I read through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it, And of course, it reminded me of a book that I wrote myself. So I realized that reading this book again, after not reading it since, I think 2014 must have been the last time I read it, because that was the last time we reviewed it.
Yes.
So after taking a break for 12 years, yeah. I come back and read it again. And I'm like, oh, this is just what I was doing when I wrote my own novel. So I wrote a novel called Minding Tomorrow. This is books that I wrote in like 2008 to 2011, like 3 years there,
yes.
where I wrote four novels, which you can just find on my website. If you go to lukeboerge.com, I think there's always a link there. It says, yeah. Luke writes his own novel. It's just because I haven't updated the text yeah. on each post mm-hmm. of the SFBRP post. It says, Luke writes his own novels. It's like, that is literally 13 years out of date.
Yes.
So I wrote some novels. And I realized that in each of the novels, what I'm trying to do is my own version, not my own version. When I'm writing a science fiction book, I'd be like, I could just write a story.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound challenging enough. Like ABC, like yes. just go through. So what I was doing was sort of like Ian and Banks, his novels weren't just straight stories. Like yeah. the ones that really work for me are Player of Games, Inversions, and some others. And I realized that that's all I'm like, what I'm doing is just doing with him. So in Mining Tomorrow, I'm doing my version mm-hmm. of what I think Player of Games is doing
yeah.
in that it's a story told out of not in linear time.
Yes.
And each chapter can reflect on the next chapter. And this book is doing a similar kind of thing, but it's not that each chapter is told about one person from different time points, mm-hmm. like from an outside observer.
Yeah.
It's from two different characters being on different sides of the same story,
yes,
or the same side of the same story, but looking at it from two different points of view,
mm-hmm.
with other stuff going on in the background. Mm-hmm. So in exactly this, in Inversions, you have these two characters, and each chapter reflects on the chapter beforehand,
mm-hmm.
and also sets up stuff that is going to be reflected on by the next chapter.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in this book, one of the clearest examples is in one scene there is an attempted rape,
mm-hmm.
and it's not successful because the person being where the attempted rape is happening is a culture agent. She's got like a knife missile.
She's got
like
magic on her disposal.
And then in the next chapter, there is the bodyguard. There is recounting. No, it goes the other way around. So there's storytelling. Yeah, there's a storytelling time when someone talks about a rape in the past.
Yes.
Then we go back to into the doctor. That's in the bodyguard. And then we go to the doctor, and then we have an attempted rape. And then we go back over to the bodyguard's chapter, and we get the real part of the story that's then reflecting on this power fantasy or what it would be like to be able to avoid being raped and who was doing the raping and who had the power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like, this is like, and it's sort of like setting one thing up. The next chapter does like develops the idea further.
Yep.
And then the next chapter from the next point of view develops the idea further.
And into action
mm-hmm. or into the characters of both sides and stuff
yes.
like that. It's just one example, but that's what's happening. Every chapter reflects on something mm-hmm. what happened in the previous chapter, which you'd think it can't do that because it's a different point of view of a different story, like at a different time frame
yeah.
or whatever, but it's working out. And then yes. it goes through the book. And when I wrote the novel Combat, I was like, well, this is what I need to do. Mm-hmm. Like if there's no point, and I was like when I was writing this, like there's no point in having multiple characters
mm-hmm.
telling alternating chapters of a story from different points of view if this isn't what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so in one of them, someone talks about their father, and then the next one, they do something that talks about the father, but then also talking about saying goodbye to someone's childhood. Then the next one, the other character talks about something childhood and their main relationship with their friend of who they were going to. And the next one, suddenly someone's talking about a religious experience. And then the other one talks about something which isn't a religious experience, but is like having a religious experience. And then the next person goes on.
Yeah.
And so... each chapter that I was doing was like reflecting on an idea which was in the previous chapter from the next point of view.
Yes.
Which is something which like, and then I read other novels and I'm like, look, Ian and Banks showed you how it's working. Why are you just telling two stories which just happen to be happening at the same time? Where is like the main point of having alternating chapters from different points of view?
Yes.
If you're not doing what Ian and Banks made it really clear that you should be doing. And it's
yeah.
all like, and it's the same thing with his, I was going to say Combat, but that was the novel I wrote.
Use of Weapons.
Use of Weapons.
Yeah.
which again, my book Combat is about use of weapons again. It's like, it's me going, what does use of weapons mean? And that's what that novel comes down to. It's sort of, it's a discussion of use of weapons.
Yeah.
But like, I'm just, and I read other people's books, I'm like, it's really obvious. I'm not a professional author and I can attempt to do that in a book. Mm. And then I read other people and they're like, la, 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 la. Well, here's just another character doing something else at the same time or else at the same time. I was like, where's the thematic exploration of two different points of view thinking about similar things at the like, it's really easy. Just do the thing.
I think what's happening here is the following.
What?
You look at, there are these optical illusion things where you are apparently looking at something 2D, something flat.
Yes.
And there's this thing where this guy developed this image of this window, which is on one end, it's bigger, and on the other end, it slants down a little bit. As soon as you start spinning it, your brain
can't turn which way around it's going.
But it perceives it suddenly as something different.
Yeah.
And there are lots of these 3D sculptures where you look at the sculpture and you see something, and then you step to the side and you see something completely different. Yeah. I think this is what is happening with Ian and Banks' books. They are one thing when you look at it straight on.
Yeah.
You just read it plain. You read what it says.
Right.
And then you step around and a whole completely new dimension opens. And what's happening with authors or other people is that they are reading this and they are seeing one thing. And then they are emulating that.
I think all of these new authors, it's weirdly to say this, it's really clear to me when I'm reading these books, who've read Ian M. Banks.
Yeah.
You know, like I say, previous novel that we did, Slow Gods by Claire North. I'm like, of course she's read Ian M. Banks. She's doing the same thing.
Yes.
Like if I was, like I said in that previous episode, if I was to write Ian M. Banks culture novel fan fiction, it wouldn't be that same thing, but like those elements I would still want to include into it as well, like that.
Yeah.
Adrian Tchaikovsky is obviously doing Ian M. Banks in a lot of his novels. Like it's right there.
Yeah.
Emma Newman, who wrote the books that was it Planetfall series as well.
Yeah.
You read that and you're like, well, she's working on that level.
Yes.
Again, it's not always as good, but there's a reason why one of her novels is on the SFBRP must reads list and Adrian Tchaikovsky's books make it on there. It's because they're thinking, you can just see in the writing that they are influenced by someone who thinks about this as much as Ian M. Banks. One other thing that I just wanted to mention, again, I could write down lots of things that I was in my own writing, in my own novels that I was rewriting, what I was trying to like bring out or like what, like the influences. But the thing specifically that I was going for, except for the alternating chapters, two different points of view, is that I wanted people to be able to read these novels in this series in any order. So there's like three novels which you can read in any order, and then one novel which is the follow-up to all three of those novels, which is a bit complicated, probably a dumb idea. But again, if you're not trying, like why would you, if you're going to write novels, if you're going to write four novels, why wouldn't you try something that experimental? Because if you just try and write a straight story, you're never going to write anything great.
No.
Like if you just try and... So one thing he does here is that this is a novel which is, if you just read it straight, it's just a fantasy novel, but there's science fiction characters in it. In my novel, Mining Tomorrow, there is time travel going on. The other two novels, which set up the third novel, one of them is set in a post-apocalypse, which is the outcome of the first novel.
Yeah.
The other one is set in one of the timelines of that first novel.
Yeah.
With some repeating characters from the between these three novels. But the characters don't know that there's a time travel, that's one of the characters is a time traveler.
Yeah.
They like the main character from the first book turns up in Combat. And the people there don't understand that there's also this is one timeline in a time travel book. And if you haven't read Mining Tomorrow, you don't get that from Combat, but the clues are there. And that was and I wanted to bring that in, sort of like, this is just a straight science fiction, near future,
obviously,
whatever, you know, cyberpunkish near future thing, you know.
Yeah.
Character study. And it's there. And one other thing is that Combat is a lot of the stories in one of the main storylines are just my father's stories. My father was in the army. He got a, you know, he was involved in the troubles in Northern Ireland. He arrested people. He got a military cross. He found religion and left the army. And that story, that one of those stories, those two stories, is pretty much a fictionalized story of the stories that my father told about him being there and getting PTSD, thinking he'd killed people. And years and years later, in fact, after I wrote this book, there was even a TV show, like a whole episode of TV, which you can look on YouTube, of my father going back to meet people who he had beaten up in trying to arrest people without shooting them. You know, it's like this really weird thing. It was his job to either kill this guy or arrest him. So he would he took his gun off and went into an IRA controlled pub to arrest someone by himself because he didn't want to go in with a gun. So this whole kind of use of weapons thing that I'm talking about in combat is very much my father's own story or stories of himself. And then, of course, later on, it turns out that the person he thought he had killed and had shot, that he had massive PTSD and like turned him away from being in the army and getting and like becoming a Christian and finding the forgiveness and all that kind of stuff. He never killed the guy. He shot at somebody and they were the person he shot at collapsed and was taken away. But the person he thought he was killed, he never shot. It was like previous gunfire on the same night.
Yes.
And it's so crazy that it was like 30 years or 40 years.
He lived with that
thinking that PTSD of stuff. And even me writing this book, it was only afterwards sort of like he said to me, oh, that it turns out that time that I thought I killed this guy, I didn't actually kill him. And you're like looking at it, and then you read the reports and you're like, oh yes, of course, because the people were hiding in the house because there'd been gunfire in the street. And my father came into this house and everyone was huddling down, and they were huddling there because there'd been gunfire in the street 2 minutes earlier, before he got there, or a few minutes before. Then he went up, then he shot at someone down the street. And then he thinks he killed the person. It turns out, no, the gunfire that these people were hiding for. And it's this whole crazy stuff. And anyway, that's the kind of stuff that I was trying to capture in this novel. Again, like properly examining the psychology and the interiority of what it's like to be a combat soldier, of something that I would never be able to do. Like, and you reading about it doesn't get it, but having grown up in a home with a father who has massive PTSD because he thought he shot and killed people in Northern Ireland and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. That's what I was trying to capture in this novel. And I don't think I did very well, but at least try. You know what I mean? There's no point in not trying.
And I think this kind of story that you just told me is reflects so much on how messy things are and how much, especially any sort of war situation or any sort of stress situation, messes up people and their perception of things. How they perceive something has such a massive influence on them and then their actions afterwards. And so what happens in Inversions and with Ian M. Banks is that is written in the text of the novel and that makes it feel like a real human experience.
There is no, hey, I'm just an action person, I kill people and everything's fine. It's a book about trauma. It's a book about PTSD. It's a book about like what it means to in the terms of Ian M. Banks, certainly what it means to accidentally drop a meteor and wipe out a city. Or what, you know, it doesn't have to be this, but you know, the case that I brought up before, sort of like this, you know, this digression into rape and trauma from that, and power and revenge and fantasy revenge, or what you can actually do as as a woman in a medieval style.
How far you can go.
How far you can go.
And before you're literally, even by the king, you're being called back, even if you are like the most respected.
Anyway.
And like, it's just
what I'm trying to say is,
well reflected.
Why wouldn't you try and put all of this into a novel? And that's the thing, probably the strength of the writing that I did of the novels that I wrote, which again, I've not read for like 12 years. I'll go back and we should, after episode 200, once we've got rid of this SFBRP. 600. Once we get past 600 and I've wrapped up the SFBRP must reads project. I might go back and reread my own novels and try them out in a different order But I think I'll just read them in the order that I wrote them or whatever, and just to see if it stands up.
Okay.
And all of the reviews that I've done of other people's books, and I can scrutinize 20 years ago Luke's writing, you know, my own writing from 20 years ago.
This was really, really not great world building.
And
here.
I can discuss like what I think of my own writing. No, I don't think it's. I think some of the books are good, but again, like what I was trying to do was, if I'm going to write a novel, why wouldn't I try and write a novel as good or as ambitious as Ian M. Banks?
Yeah.
And that's what me reading this book made me think of. Yes. I'm like, why don't more authors just try and do... And again, I do think people do it. Emma Newman with the Planetfall series is doing something, trying to be as ambitious as this.
Yeah.
But not everyone even tries. Some people are like, well, I'll just tell a story. And the worst thing is, I think lots of people try on their first novel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so you'll read a Fifth Season book, whatever that first Broken Earth novel is, and you're like, this is amazing. This is great. This is like super high level. And then you read the next book and they're sort of like, oh yeah, the publishers just wanted another book with these same characters. And you're like, Ian M. Banks never just did another book with the same characters.
Yeah.
Like, what interest is there to anyone to just go, and the next story is this. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's what I'm saying. Like Adrian Tchaikovsky, with his, you know, some of his novels, his worst novels are the ones where, and now the same characters, but just a bit more.
Mm.
And I'm like, that isn't why we're here.
Yeah.
And Emma Newman is sort of like, I've got a world, I've got an idea, I've got a concept of these different novels. Like, why would I ever return to the same character? Their story is wrapped up. Like, let's move on to the new one. And So yeah, it's something to think about in that way.
Yes, I do think actually the publishing world and the way that it's set up and the money earning with it.
Nine Fox Gambit, like let's have two more of them. And you're like, let's give the whole point of Nine Fox Gambit is like you had to think.
Let's give authors a 10 book contract.
Yeah.
And then they have to keep churning it out.
Yeah.
And this
I don't think it's a 10 book. I honestly think it's a 3 book.
Okay.
Like
when you write
a book as good as Nine Fox Gambit and they like write two more and you're like, all right, so this is now the first book in the Machine of His Empire. And I'm like, anytime that someone writes one of those first great books, I'm like, the chances of these next two books being a continuation of this fantastic 5-star book, I'm not like, there's just. Like, why are you even, like...
And it you can even feel it often enough in these first books because they feel like a standalone thing.
Because they're the person's book, which is the one that gets them, which is so good that they can't be... Like, The Space Between Worlds, The Light Brigade.
Yes.
You know, these other more recent... Well, I can actually just look at some of these more recent...
Yeah.
Where is it? Must Reads list as well. If you know, going back here as well. Space Between Worlds... Light Brigade, The Quantum Magician, Nine Fox Gambit, Fifth Season, Ancillary Justice. These more recent books here of these authors, which again, I would say most of these kind of can fit into like this modern wave of science fiction.
Yeah.
Especially going back to Ancillary Justice, which I think kicked off this like more gender focused tour wave stuff, but not like Squeak or not like all the negative parts of that.
But there's like, some reflection going on.
Yeah, there's some reflection and ambition.
Yes.
And then not all of these books have follow-ups. But as soon as you get to the next book, it's sort of like, and now just more of this. And I'm like, nah, not good. And Ian M. Banks never just did, and now more of this. I mean, he did, because it's more spaceships and more culture stuff and more adventures by special circumstances. But like each one of them has a new story with a new character to tell.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's it.
Yeah. I then, after finishing this book, went back to the list that you have published.
Oh, which list? The Must Reads list?
No.
Oh.
No, not that one.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking like now we have all the 10 Ian M. Banks culture books.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go, which am I going to read next? And so I went to the list that you published.
Start with Player of Games.
So anyway, what I try to say here is that on the SFBRP or on your blog or somewhere, there is a list where it says, this is the recommended order of culture novels.
Yeah, where did you find it?
I Googled.
Oh, you Googled it. I thought it was here on the podcast. I think it's about the podcast.
Let me have a look.
For a good list to deepen your science fiction experience, check out the... Oh, no. If you're interested in the culture series, check out our recommended culture series reading order. So it's there on the about the podcast.
Yes, sfbrp.com. And so I've just found it. And then I thought, why not do that? So what I'm going to do is exactly that.
Play of games next?
Yep.
All right, then. This will be your second read-through of the culture novels?
Yes.
Right, good.
And it's going to be paper books, and I'm really happy about that.
I might join in with you with Player of Games, because, again, that's on the SFBRP must-reads list.
Yeah.
So I probably won't do consider Flavors again, but Player of Games and Use of Weapons, let's reread those at least.
Okay.
I mean, you can reread whatever you want, but I'm going to do this.
I will reread all of them, one after the other.
Right, let's do that.
And at some point...
I think I have them all as audiobooks and as ebooks. So
I have several in different places, and it's really difficult to find.
Yeah,
and also
then
this
Finish
one.
His End. But again, I don't have time to read that because I'm reading an ebook from the library. So I need to I've got 3 weeks to finish this.
We
book.
Just have this now.
Yeah,
this
you can read it whenever you want, and I'll read it whenever I want. And we both read
it's
we'll
really
do
good.
Affinity's
we
End.
We just own it
and see if it gets onto the SFBRP must read list. But this one definitely is. All right then. Anything else?
Oh, yeah, I got a book out from the library.
I meant about this book.
Oh, no.
Okay. Okay, next book.
I think we said everything. Yeah, no, five stars
I wanted to definitely wrap up Ian M. Banks and Inversions.
We now have wrapped up Inversions.
Okay, it's on the list.
5 stars from both of us.
5 stars and it's on the list.
Yes.
It's so good to read a good book.
It feels good. Anyway, I got a book that I was now available after weeks and weeks and weeks
on
and weeks of waiting.
On the library app.
In the library app.
Yeah.
Which is called Mainframes and Monsters. Of Mainframes and Monsters. So I'm currently reading that. And it is...
By?
Barbara Lovegood or something? Love something?
Well, thank you very much for knowing who wrote the book. Okay, Monster Mage. Don't worry about it.
Anyway, we will talk about more when I read it because.
Oh, you think we're going to do an episode about it?
Yes.
Okay.
I might recommend it to you. However, it is definitely more of a quippy read.
I know. I just don't think I'm into quippy dialogue at the moment. I know it's weird to say this, but
it's a little bit. It's a little bit better than that.
It feels like I just want to be. I don't know, read good writing, which I'm reading because the writing is good and the story is good and the character is good, rather than the dialogue is snappy. You know what I mean? And so many of these books recently, I'm like, I'm meant to be thinking this dialogue is snappy and I'm meant to be reading this as though I'm watching an episode of Firefly or whatever.
Yeah. Anyway,
or a Marvel movie.
I will get through this pretty easily.
Well, let's see.
And then I will make a decision if I say you should read it or if I just...
I just want to say... There is
reviewed.
Almost nothing you can tell me about the book which is going to make me read a book called Of Monsters and Mainframes.
Vampires?
Anything that you tell me now, after you mention that word, is probably going to make me less likely to read it. So just so you know, nothing that you're going to say is going to make me more likely to read a book like that.
Okay.
And almost everything that you're going to say is probably going to make me less likely to want to read it. So just putting that out there, keep it in mind. Read the book and enjoy the quippy dialogue.
Okay.
And I'll look it up and see if my outside view of what I'm looking
at. Your antennas.
My tingling antennas are going to... Anyway, so that's it. Should we wrap it up there?
Yeah.
Follow me on Mastodon. Follow me on Goodreads. There's a good place. Follow me on Blue Sky as well.
Yeah.
Again, all I do in these places is just post updates that there's a new podcast there. So you can follow me on Instagram. I'm at Luke Burge there. And most importantly, follow me or become a supporter on Patreon.com.
Yes.
So patreon.com/LukeBurge. Lots of juggling projects is there, but also we do have SFBRP listeners who do support us financially on Patreon for this podcast. So thank you so much for that. Right, it's 1 hour and 15 minutes. That seems to be the standard length for all our main episodes here, mainline episodes. So that's it from us. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.